Those people who are practicing the great perfection but have no compassion, don't stay near them. They are on the wrong path. Why is it that these great enlightened practitioners come again and again, life after life, to benefit sentient beings? They have already attained Buddhahood. They already can carry on in the Pure Lands, but they have this incredibly strong aspiration to benefit sentient beings, and this incredible aspiration to benefit sentient beings bring them back again and again to benefit sentient beings. The purpose of practicing the great perfection is not that we free ourselves from samsara. It is that we attain the highest levels of compassion and wisdom, and with this that we benefit suffering sentient beings. And what is Hinayana is wishing for oneself to be free from the sufferings of samsara, just considering one's own liberation. This is not the case for the practice of the great perfection. We always think, may I just make my life a little bit more compassionate, have a little bit more wisdom, have a little bit more belief. May I become closer and closer to being just the same as a bodhisattva, that I may be able to face samsara in order to benefit sentient beings. It is not to try and avoid samsara. And so we see in the biographies of all of these great bodhisattvas, the aspiration of the bodhisattvas is to, life after life, benefit sentient beings. There's never been one that said, oh, I'm just going to attain enlightenment for myself, that's all. All the bodhisattvas, Manjushri, Chenrezig, Sikh, Kshitigarbha, Sakyamuni Buddha, definitely they all made the aspiration, let me, life after life, benefit sentient beings, to benefit sentient beings. And this type of benefit definitely comes from having a really high state of realization, a very high level of compassion and wisdom in order to benefit sentient beings. You think it's easy to save sentient beings? It's very, very difficult. On the surface, they are taking refuge, they are busy practicing, they are busy meditating, but in reality, the amount that are actually saved are really very few. We start from zero, we start taking refuge. However, the amount of these practitioners who can genuinely attain Buddhahood in this very lifetime are very few. Everybody practice bodhicitta, compassion, this is the great perfection. Do you think Chenrezig doesn't have the state of great perfection? Of course Chenrezig does. If we are practicing great perfection, however, we don't have the foundation of compassion, then what we are practicing is possibly negative. Where do we start practicing compassion? Through practicing forbearance. How do we practice forbearance? With our parents, our families, our friends, between our Vajra brothers and sisters. They give us the opportunity to smooth over those rough edges. Is it difficult? Of course, there's a lot of suffering when we're practicing it. However, the result is merit. Consider our actions, whether if we do this is beneficial or not. If it is of merit to engage in the activity, then engage in the activity. If it's of no merit, then don't engage in the activity. Is it difficult to face these obstacles? Is it difficult to face these afflictive emotions? Yes, it is. Gradually, through our practice, we improve. Is it difficult to practice? It's difficult. There's many difficulties. And then we think, oh, then all we need to do is realize the true nature of mind with some emptiness. We think, oh, this is very easy. But is it so easy? No, it's very difficult. However, use everything, all the difficulties, all the obstacles, all the discomforts as part of our practice, and do our best to overcome these difficulties. If we can't transcend the difficulties, then how are we going to attain Buddhahood? And when we are in the process of facing those difficulties and transforming them into something positive, is it difficult? Yes, it's very uncomfortable. When it's uncomfortable, practice forbearance. And when some negativity arises, then it's best to not engage. However, very often we're not willing to do this, and so we engage in the negativity. Don't do this, be more resolute. if you want to attain Buddhahood. Have resolute aspirations and courage. Think to oneself, I have Buddha nature. Why do I not want to practice to realize it? And then practice day by day, and day by day, our merit is accumulated. Everybody is going on retreat, everybody's practicing, reciting the Sutra of Great Liberation. Really, the merits of the Sutra of Great Liberation are inexpressible. And every time that you read the Sutra of Great Liberation, it is being carved into your mind stream. Is it easy to carve the Sutra of Great Liberation into one's mind stream? No, it's not easy. And Buddha said, as a method for repentance, really, for this purpose of boundless merit is the Sutra of Great Liberation. And when we're reciting it, reading it, it is being carved into our mind stream. And the merits of the Sutra of Great Liberation, you all know, and it even mentions it in the Sutra of Great Liberation. And this merit, life after life, won't be lost. I myself knew of the Sutra of Great Liberation before, but it was only when I really met His Holiness Mokta Rinpoche of Katok Monastery that he really stressed how inexpressible the merits thereof were that I really started reciting it. And at that time I didn't really understand the content in the Sutra of Great Liberation. His Holiness Mokta Rinpoche used to spend the whole day reciting mantras, meeting people, engaging in virtuous activities, doing empowerments. However, whenever he got back, even if he got back at midnight, he would wake up early in the morning and recite the Sutra of Great Liberation. And I was so surprised. I was wondering why he placed so much importance on the Sutra of Great Liberation. And I asked him, and his only answer was, when there's one day, you have one day. When the day's passed, when you have the next day, you have the next day. And then from that, I really felt, okay, I really don't understand impermanence. I thought I was practicing it quite well, but now I have the feeling that maybe I am not practicing impermanence that well. I don't think that maybe it's possible that I might die very soon. And so His Holiness Mokta Rinpoche noticed my weakest point in terms of my practice. I would ask him about the best way to benefit sentient beings and how to teach. And he used to just answer saying, you have one day, use that day well. You have one day, use that day well. What we have today, use that time well. And then at the end of the day, if we wake up the next morning, then use that time well again. You see, this is the great compassion and the great realization of His Holiness Mokta Rinpoche. He sees the reality of things. Wow, you see, they have this incredible state of realization. And this fifth instruction really was very, very helpful to me. And isn't this the case for many people? They are so involved in planning and plotting for a nice, beautiful future. And I saw him reciting the Sutra of Great Liberation every day, placing so much importance on it. Because his root guru was Jamyang Khyentse Chuji Lodru. And before his root guru, he made this vow that every day he would recite the Sutra of Great Liberation. And from this we really see these great enlightened masters, how they really treasure their relationship with their Vajra Guru. Look at him. He was His Holiness at the age of 90, and still, because he made this vow to his teacher, his Vajra Guru, even still, he was reciting the Sutra of Great Liberation every day. And irrespective of what he did during the day, all the virtuous activities, empowerments, teachings, still every day, he would recite the Sutra of Great Liberation either late at night or first thing in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. And look at the result when he went into Parinirvana in Katok Monastery. All of the water at the Katok Monastery turned to milk, and all the water in the mountain that was there turned to milk. And of all the history that I know, I've never heard of this happening. This is the manifestation of his merits. And really, some of the things that happened that appeared at the time of his Parinirvana in Katok Monastery were really, really quite incredible. At the time, I was at Sanya, and I think he had been at Guangzhou, and he phoned me and he said, Gyalwen Nyugu Rinpoche, where are you now? And he said, oh, I'm in Sanya. And His Holiness Mokta Rinpoche said, Have you ever been to Tizimpama? And he said, okay, I will go to Shitampama. And he said, do you want to come? And I said, well, I've never been to them, to this place. And he said, oh, it's really beautiful. And then he said, I'm leaving tomorrow. You want to come? So Rinpoche said, okay, I'll come and I'll leave tomorrow also. And he said, wonderful, let's go there then. And then I spent this time with him for about half a month. And in that time, the only people that were able to see him was his close family and some of his very close students. He wasn't seeing any other students because, like myself, he also has very, very, very many students. And every day we would do something. On the one day, he'd say, okay, let's go to this place. There are so many peacocks. And we'd go and there are so many peacocks over there. And the next day, it's over there. There's some elephant. And he would go and see the elephant. And so I spent time with him like this for half a month. In this time that I was with him, I really felt that he was different. He was speaking different. He was doing things differently. And I was wondering if it was just me that was noticing this. And in those 15 days, the time together, every day, just went out and we enjoyed ourselves. Spending time going to see the peacocks, the elephants, and the time passed very, very quickly. And when I was with him, he used to give me some money, and he used to say, yeah, take this money and go and buy this and go and buy that. And so I used to go and buy some of the local products over there from the local people. And in all this time that I was with him, I really felt a little bit sad. I thought I could be organizing everything for him. I could be paying for everything. But all that time that I was there with him, he paid for everything. He organized everything. He wouldn't let me organize anything. And then after these 15 days, he said he needs to return to Guangdong to the Katok Monastery. And when we were leaving the hotel, we were in a lift together and he had this watch and he said, here, let me give you this watch. And we were all in the lift and we were all in a posture of homage. And His Holiness Moksha Rinpoche's left hand, I think, was not so good. And he took this watch and he said, life after life, always be with your Vajra Guru. And he gave me the watch and I accepted it. And at that time, I didn't know if this was a good thing or not. And I put the watch on and then we accompanied him to the aeroplane and watched him leave. And he returned to the monastery and I didn't get the chance to see him again. And he went into Parinirvana. And sometimes some of these inexpressible things can happen. Similarly, around the time that His Holiness Lama Achuk Rinpoche was going to go into Parinirvana, there were all kinds of different happenings. And so when these enlightened teachers are together, there's really this incredible compassion. Really, the way they treat the students, their great vast compassion, their great love, irrespective of how difficult the students are, how difficult it is to transform them, how strong their reflective emotions and their negative karma. The guru never gives up on the students. And they guide us and accompany us life after life, and we really have this feeling. Really, these great masters are far too compassionate, compassionate beyond what we can think of. Such compassion that we can't even think of the extent of their compassion. This compassion that benefits us from life after life. This great, vast kindness beyond words. This incredible kindness of these great masters. Their incredible patience and forbearance. Going with sentient beings, benefiting sentient beings, accompanying sentient beings. And what do the sentient beings bring? They have just really attachment, aversion, and ignorance, and still towards them they have this great kindness. They treat us like a mother does their child. He's kind to them, he's compassionate to them, irrespective of how negative their karma is. Those sentient beings that are really difficult to transform with such heavy karma, they even treat us with greater kindness and greater compassion. really, their compassion towards us is inexpressible. The way they treat us, the way they look at us, the way they speak to us, the way they care for us, that irrespective of what happens, they don't abandon us. This is the great compassion of the Bodhisattvas, why we're talking